Class is now in session. Welcome to Ed History 101. I'm Jennifer.
And I am Paul.
And Paul, I made a promise to you in episode one that this would be all about you.
You did make that promise. Are you going to break that promise?
I'm going to try not to. It's Ed History 101.
Should be Ed Paulstery 101.
Paulstery? That would work. The way in which I'm going to make today's episode all about you is to harken back to when we saw Captain America Civil War.
Oh, okay.
Yes. You knew immediately what team you were on.
Yes.
Unequivocally.
As soon as there was a choice, yeah, I knew.
So I'm thinking that your strong opinions about what team is right, what team is wrong.
Did you just call me opinionated?
I may have alluded to it.
Okay.
Yes. I don't think this is a secret.
I have opinions on that.
Today's topic is about fixing schools, and to make some incredibly broad, sweeping generalizations about a very complex issue, there's basically two sides. And originally, I was going to call them Team Insider and Team Outsider. But the nature of public education in America is that pretty much everyone is an insider. Because you either fund it as a taxpayer, you went to school, your children go to school, you know people who go to public education. Pretty much everybody is insider. And like, if there are towns in which the school district is the largest employer. So everybody cares deeply about public education in that situation. So there really is no such thing as team outsider. And then I was going to call it the team of 6 degrees of separation, like Kevin Bacon. So like team zero would be the students themselves because they're closest to education. And then team six would be folks like Bill Gates or Diane Ravitch, who are deeply invested in education, but not, you know, in the classroom. And then I got confused and opened Twitter. And I forgot where I was going with that.
That makes sense. That'll happen.
So then I went with the obvious. Team reform.
Okay.
Or team TPS.
Putting cover sheets on our TPS reports.
All of our reports. Okay. So I have to give a quick shout out to my Twitter friend / thought buddy / argumentative partner, Odd Hilly, who recommended Team TPS or Team Traditional Public Schools.
Yeah. I'm going to need you to go ahead and work this weekend. Where does TPS come from?
Team Traditional Public Schools.
So not Office Space.
No.
Okay.
No, and it wasn't my idea, it was Odd Hilly. So I'm going to raise a glass to Ms. Odd Hilly. So to be clear, Team Reform are the team who have a specific vision for a change that needs to be made, and they work towards those changes.
Okay.
Okay. Team TPS isn't necessarily against change, but generally speaking, they're saying what we have now doesn't need changing, or the change that you're proposing will not make things better.
Okay.
Okay. That feels neutral, right? That feels like fair to both teams?
Yeah.
Okay. I hope so.
If it's not, they can get their own podcast.
So when you hear the phrase school reform or school improvement, what do you think of?
I think of Twitter. It's an inside joke, folks.
And here I am doing my best to be all neutral and, you know, kind of Switzerland about this. So do you remember anyone coming in and trying to fix your school while you were there?
Not specifically.
Just like head down and...
Yeah, head down, keep... below the weeds.
Yeah. So this is going to be a sloppy and messy analogy, but we're going to give it our best try.
Perfect.
One of the problems of this particular analogy, there is an inherent flaw, because school reform is about trying to fix a system that is built on a foundation that used forced human labor to build capital. So the foundation of the country, and therefore the public education system, is about seeing people of color as less than, or people that needed to be re-educated in order to be more like the ideal white American. And then there is a sexism that runs so deep that we as a country talk about our founding fathers and never seem to question why it wasn't founding parents or what the heck were the founding mothers up to at the same time. So there's the foundational flaws of racism and sexism that kind of undergird the system. Another problem is that team reform aren't the villains, while team TPS are the heroes.
So then don't have heroes and villains in this story.
No. Nor do we have people who are ready to change, people who are afraid of change, because it's not that simple. These teams are made up of people with deeply held convictions. So to try and say, you know, this team is this absolute and this team is that absolute does a disservice to those people. The third problem is the phenomenon of recency bias. We tend to remember the most recent thing that we heard. And if our most recent understanding of reform is some things that are happening right now, we tend to think that's what reform is. It's kind of become this sort of snarky thing. So some members, public members of Team Reform, will snarkily call Team TPS Team Status Quo, where Team TPS will call reformers deformers. So I'm going to do my best to try and play the long game, to tell the whole story of Team Reform and Team TPS. So Team Reform is committed to change. They have a vision. They're going to go there. Team TPS has a vision of what schools should be. And they respond when what Reform is suggesting interferes with what that vision is. Make sense?
It makes sense.
You ready to go on?
Yes.
Okay.
Make a black and white picture out of gray.
Exactly. We're going to do our best here. And so I'm going to make you a little bit like Black Widow.
Except that lonely Japanese men are not going to make weird flirty robots out of my image.
I'm fairly confident over the course of public education, there's never been a moment where people said, yep, this is it, we got it, this is perfect. And if that actually did happen, it was very likely your skin folk, the white males of European descent, that said, this is it, this works for us.
We got this.
Yes, and they weren't very overly concerned with how the system impacted girls and boys of color.
It's all about us.
Yeah, so it's... My goal is to make this a 20-25 minute podcast, not 6 hours. So I'm going to take 100 years.
Well, I appreciate that.
100 years of school reform and try to distill it. So we're going to give quick lip service to Thomas Jefferson. Because Thomas Jefferson was probably the first person to try and reform this thing called school. And he
Should I be taking notes to put these people in order of which team they're? Okay.
Just hang on for the ride, dude. Just hang on for the ride.
That's better.
So he kept advocating we need a large scale taxpayer funded system for white boys. We'll set that aside for a moment. His efforts were unsuccessful because, in effect, the early Team TPS was saying, no, we got it. Let us educate our kids in our drawing rooms, in our churches, in our little bitty schoolhouses. We got this covered. Don't worry about us. So he tried to do that. And then along came Horace Mann.
Horace Mann.
But I'm sick of talking about Horace Mann.
Oh, that's reasonable.
So I'm going to introduce you to Catherine Beecher. Catherine Beecher was described by Dani Goldstein in her book, The Teacher Wars, as, quote, America's first media darling school reformer. Basically, what she did is turn teaching into a profession that was incredibly attractive to middle-class white women. So Catherine Beecher, in effect, feminized the teaching profession. When she was 21, she crossed paths with Mann, and they talk. And then Catherine Beecher's fiancé died. And she was very upset and grieving and very, very sad. So she read a bunch of his letters. And in his letters, she discovered that he had a much better education than she did. And she just had some questions about her relationship with God. So basically what happened is that for Catherine Beecher became an agnostic feminist, but then kept going. And she became committed to this idea that, A, women could be better teachers than men ever could. Girls should be entitled to a full education in order to be the best woman that they could. And voting would corrupt women's souls. So she kind of like went past feminist into this whole kind of other direction. And the reason this is important is that Catherine Beecher became a proselytizer. She would give these speeches and she would orate about the magic and the beauty and the power of being a teacher. Her theory was, you might not be able to get closer to God through prayer, but you can if you do good work for other people's kids. And her commitment was so deep that she basically created the idea of the mother teacher. That's what the mother was. Not this mean, scolding old, you know, Ichabod Crane kind of guy, but this loving and gentle and glowing, kind of person. In fact, she gave a speech in 1846 called, quote, "The Evils Suffered by American Women and the American Children." And remember how in the last episode, the summer vacation episode, I told you about all the reports the New York State superintendents filed?
Yeah.
She found those. In those reports, she found male teachers described as incompetent, an intemperate, coarse, hard, unfeeling, too lazy, or stupid. And then she moved in for the kill. And here's what she said. Female workers are cheaper. You can hire a female for half the price of a male teacher. Her idea caught on to such a degree that by 1840, female teachers entered the profession at a rate four times that of male teachers. And to be clear, male teachers weren't all of those things. They had few resources, bad buildings. These are the exact same conditions that Beecher was trying to convince these white women to go into. Whereas the male teachers did it as a profession, as a job. These women did it as a vocation. It was a calling. Their whole idea was to send out these women into the world. And Catherine Beecher created something called the Board of National Popular Education. So she sent these teachers out as missionaries. Basically, she pulled them together for a month and said, okay, here's how to teach. Watch out for bears. Go left.
Go teach.
Yes. And her call to them was, act as a source of moral power. Their reform wave was to say, school is a place that could create good moral people. And not just learn academics. That's what they did over there in Europe. This is America. And in America, our schools are going to be about creating good Americans. And a lot of this history I got from Goldstein's book, and she summarized the reform effort by saying, the tightly knit first generation of American education reformers tended to see schools as secular churches, community centers where any child could be improved, even religiously saved through education. It was more important to teach a child good deeds than good doctrine, to focus less on the details of literature and math than to create faithful, decent, socially adept young men and women. Team TPS pushback at that time was grounded in religious reform. So Mann and Beecher were Protestants, and a couple of Catholic writers would say what they're trying to do is about turning the kids into Protestants, not good, devout Catholics. So there was some pushback around that. In example, one Catholic critic said that schools are trying to usurp the parent. And this is like 1842 for the record, so we've had that refrain a few times. So let's ride the Beecher and Mann wave all the way up to Civil War. So in the Civil War, there's going to be two concurrent waves that begin to rise and crest. One wave is about moving heaven and earth to make sure that recently freed enslaved adults and children got the education long denied to them. The other wave is about doing whatever it took to ensure those children were not sitting next to white children. So let's start with reforming the system for recently freed enslaved children. We talked a bit upon this particular movement. We talked about Anna Julia Cooper and the DC schools. So you remember when we went on that tour of, what was that called? That place in South Carolina?
Brookgreen Gardens.
Yes. And they talked about the Sea Islands. That was a part of the school reform movement for black children. And what it was is that as the Union captured land, it was given to recently freed slaves. And they created this school system that not only sought a basic literacy, children would go to school in the day, adults would go to school at night, but they offered a classical liberal arts education, Greek and Latin, and it thrived. They created farms and they had this whole industry and things were going great. And then along came President Andrew Johnson. And I'm not going to call him Team TPS, but he did say it's over because once the war ended, the white owners of land came back. They had the deeds in their hand and they basically shut down this whole school system. The entire project was called the Port Royal Experiment, and it could have been this template for Reconstruction. But as we know through history, there was this advancement for people of color in America, and then there was the pushback from white Americans. And despite that setback, the efforts by black Americans to ensure their children had quality education continued through people like Booker T. Washington and Robert Fitzgerald, Charlotte Fortin, and W.B. Du Bois. And this is where the lines get crossed, because we have Booker T. Washington and W.E.B. Du Bois. They constantly debated over the best way to educate the children and grandchildren of freed enslaved people. So remember the end of the Captain America movie?
Yeah.
Okay. That's what Booker T. and W.E.B. were kind of like, that little bit when they kind of bonded there at the end. There was this kind of bonding and back and forth, and we disagree, but we share a common aim. And then along came Jim Crow. And that became the deliberate segregation of schools that would eventually lead to Brown versus Board of Education in 1954.
So why is Jim Crow Team Reform and not Team TPS?
Well,
they're going back to the status quo of segregation.
I tried to be clear kind of in my rules. And my thinking was Team Reform is about change. Team TPS is about pushing back against a certain change. And the thing about the segregation in Jim Crow is that it sought to make change. They codified it in laws. There was the actual Jim Crow laws. There were the literacy tests for voting. There was Plessy versus Ferguson. So they didn't just push back. They reformed in a different direction. To be clear, segregation wasn't every single school district, but on a national level, it was the pattern. So Plessy versus Ferguson said you can have separate but equal, but it was so not equal. In some states, the per pupil expenditure for black children was $6, and it was 32 for white children. So there was this huge discrepancy between children. Plessy versus Ferguson gave white adults permission to continue the reform about segregating the schools. And so I'm going to strongly encourage anyone who listens to this podcast to check out the podcast Stuff You Missed in History Class. They did a whole series on Brown versus Board of Education, everything leading up to it. They did it on redlining and housing discrimination and white flight and how all of that contributed to school segregation and desegregation. And I linked to all of this on our website, edhistory101.com. And just this month, in fact, the Government Accountability Office released a report on school segregation. In an article about it in The Guardian, and one quote jumped out at me that I thought was really very interesting. "There are many who believe in this country that we are operating on an even playing field," said J. Dean Johnson, staff attorney at Advancement Project. "I think what this report reveals is that the legacies of slavery in this country, the legacies of Jim Crow, are alive and active," she said. "That did not go away with Brown versus Board of Education." So if we were to play very firm with our rules and say team reform is change, team TPS is nope, not this change, then we look to the time of Brown versus Board of Education and say George Wallace literally stood in front of a school and said, "Segregation now, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever." So we have the reform of forcibly segregating, and then some time goes by, and then we have,
and then he's TPS. He's, so the reform made the change, and now he's standing for the change.
Yeah, he's there defending and standing for the change.
So it's really, this whole reform and not reform is really confusing.
Incredibly confusing. And it's going to get even more confusing as we get in the 21st century. The 20th century is going to get even more complicated. Because now, at the turn of the century, we have philanthropy. And for the first time, instead of the reform effort coming from politicians and taxpayers, it's coming from private citizens with a boatload of money. Which meant if they had a pet project, they could, in effect, reform a part of the school system because they had the money to change the system. Remember Andrew Carnegie? Carnegie changed the look of the American high school because he gave a lot of money to college professors. It boggles the mind to think about the drivers of change, and it's just absolutely fascinating. In the turn of the century, starting around 1910 or about 1970, there was something called the Great Migration, where a large number of blacks and African Americans moved to northern cities, which meant then some of the reform in urban schools came from the black community, saying we need some changes to schools. And sometimes team TPS would say these changes aren't right for our school. Other times there were white educators saying we need to make these changes to make schools better for all children. So it gets very, very confusing. And reforms happen fast and furious. So for example, the reformers got child labor laws passed, which meant there were more kids going into classrooms, leaving the factories. They established building codes so that going to school wouldn't, you know, kill
dangerous.
You. Yes, exactly. They created the high school as we know it. They brought an end to the Carlisle Indian School in Pennsylvania. But at the same time, they also said it was okay to educate girls only to a certain level. That was natural. And it was natural to keep the gender separated. It was natural for teachers to be female because, again, the reverberations of Catherine Beecher, that's what women do. They're better at it than men are because they're more caring.
Teachers, nurses, secretaries. Yeah. That's pretty
much it. Exactly. It's what women are meant to do. Women's True Calling, which is a great book I just started reading, by the way. So they closed Carlisle, but they took what they were doing, the practices of Carlisle, to the schools on the reservation with the same kind of message that who you are as an Indigenous person is not good enough. You need to do these things in order to be considered worthy of American citizenship, which, ugh, history, it's just, ugh.
It's mind-boggling.
It is all bottled up. Can you hear it in there? So, I mean, there wasn't a lot of pushback from Team TPS because things were happening so quickly. But then, unions. Slam those brakes on. Team Reform created unions. Now, remember, Team Reform is people changing the school system. And these were women who said, we need to talk together. We need to work together. We need to create a union. So they were starting collective bargaining. And they were saying, we should get equal pay regardless of the grade that we teach, our content, or the teacher's gender. Team TPS said, nope, don't worry about it. Us schoolmen, we got a handle on this. We can take care of that.
Schoolmen.
And then Team Reform brings these new handy-dandy IQ tests. And Team TPS said, maybe it's not such a good idea to reduce a child to a test.
But child's not a number. Heard that before.
Have you heard that before?
Huh.
Team Reform is all about, no, this is good. This is modern.
This is child is a number. Yes. Shut up and like it.
Let me show you the number. On one hand, how can you be Team Iron Man? Because the reason we have a division is because of Iron Man. He created Ultron. He's the reason the city fell from the sky. How can you possibly be on Team Iron Man? How can you possibly be on Team Reform? They're the people who brought IQ tests into schools in the 20s. But they're also the people who created unions and the people who created schools.
Iron Man was pretty well black and white.
He is the reason people died and country made up a stand.
Yes,
he's the reason they died.
That. However, when the rule time came and the UN said you must follow the rules, he's like, you're right, we should. And Captain America's like, I don't wanna.
Are you feeling the mixed emotions I have about this?
Yes.
Okay, so we now have to move to the modern era.
Okay.
Of school reform.
The modern era.
1965. President Johnson goes to war against poverty. War against nouns always goes well. So he passed the Elementary and Secondary Act. And for the first time, Team Reform had the full weight and force of the federal government behind it. And no child left behind? That's the child of war on poverty. The recently passed, soon to be enacted, Every Student Succeed Acts is its grandchild. And what these things all have in common is a focus on standards and accountability. When we look at Team Reform, they have tried to do a number of things in the modern era. And part of that is national standards. Something else that keeps appearing from Team Reform is evaluating teachers by test scores, by their students' test scores. That's not new. That's been around for a very long period of time. Merit pay keeps coming up from Team Reform. And each time Team TPS says, this may not be a very good idea. Now, sometimes the idea for merit pay came from the teachers themselves. So we can't say Team TPS is just ideas that come from teachers, because their teachers can be on Team Reform. Oh, dear. So, and right now in the modern era, if you say Team Reform, people think charter schools. Charter schools is an idea that started from the public school system to say, let's have this experimentation system. But now, when you say charter schools, people think privatization and attach all these other things to it. So when we now talk about reform, people think about that basket of stuff that happens right now in public education that perhaps they don't like. So right now, reform has come to mean generally broad sweeping statements to mean anything that Team TPS does not like. That makes sense?
It does make sense.
So now I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay.
Recognizing the inherent flaw that dichotomies are terrible, that nothing is ever black or white or up or down. There's always shades of gray. There's always tilted sideways. And life isn't a movie. It's not as simple as...
It's not?
No. I know, I'm sorry.
I didn't sign up for that.
Yeah. It's not as simple as Team Cap or Team Iron Man. What side do you choose? What team are you on? Are you Team Reform or Team TPS?
There really isn't an answer. You can't be.
Can't be what?
Either. Both.
Neither.
Yeah. It's too muddled.
It is. It really, really is. Which then speaks to the frustrating part of saying reformers are bad, teachers are always right. Because that's not always true.
Sometimes teachers are reformers. And sometimes they're not right. So some reforms are good. I certainly don't want to be on George Wallace's team.
Yeah.
Because...
And I'm kind of... I'm a little angry at Kathryn Beecher because her team...
Screwed a lot of stuff up.
Yeah, it kind of created this whole muddled mess. It is a muddled mess.
It's a muddled mess.
So I think we should go with Team Deadpool.
Team Deadpool. Perfect.
All right. That works. Are you ready for your pop quiz?
I'm ready.
All right. Let's fill in the blank.
Oh, awesome.
Yes, I'm going to read you a quote.
Like Mad Libs?
Kind of. Those. Here's the quote.
Okay.
A teacher who, blank, is utterly unfit to be entrusted with the education of our public school children. The dangers inherent in the continuance of such a teacher far outweigh all other considerations, and even otherwise perfect performance as a teacher cannot be invoked to preserve her tenure. What went in the blank?
Worship Satan.
I was going to give you choices. You want to go with that?
let's do your choices, because I'm sure mine's not one of them.
A teacher who gets married. B, a teacher who belongs to an organization with an unpopular view. Or C, a teacher who refuses to teach cursive writing.
Well, see, I'm going to go with B, because people who worship Satan are in a group with an unpopular view. So
it works.
It does work.
It works.
That's the one I'm going with.
Yeah, and it was actually B. It was a commentary on how so many teachers who were perceived to be communists got fired.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Bonus points if you can guess what year it's from.
Do I have to be exact or
give me a decade.
1960s.
Close. 1950.
1950.
Yes. It was set at the trial of 8 Jewish members of the New York City Teachers Union.
See, I didn't do good in history, so...
That's okay. A decade, though. You weren't off. You weren't off for that long. And the challenge of this particular case is that the prosecutor admitted he had absolutely no evidence that the teachers' membership in any organization had any impact upon the student themselves, but that wasn't necessary. He just had a hunch that their views were anti-American.
Yeah, commies.
What's the moral of tonight's episode?
Some change is good. Some is not.
And don't pick a side. You don't have to pick a side.
Yeah.
You can be like Black Widow. You can say, I'm going to support you, but when I disagree with the dumb thing that you're doing, I'm going to go over to this team and I'm going to help out Black Panther. Because that's the right thing to do. So on that, class dismissed.
Good call.